Teebecker.
The podcast for London lovers, Anglophiles and critical believers. RevLab.
So let's begin. Hi, Carla. How are you doing?
I'm good. Another episode of travelling through London in our thoughts from our living rooms.
Or bedroom, from my perspective.
Oh yeah, bedroom in your perspective.
But I'm quite excited to the place we're going today. Where are you taking me today?
One of my favourite spots in London, Highgate Cemetery.
Oh yes, beautiful.
You know it?
I've been there. I've lived very near. It's in North London and I've lived like 5-10 minutes from it. So I've been there a couple of times, indeed. It's a beautiful, old, architecturally amazing and slightly overgrown, sort of a bit wild cemetery.
Yeah. And when I walk, from our home to the cemetery, it's about half an hour walk. I would walk through Waterlow Park. And then you cross the park, come out, turn left, and then you're between the two parts, East and West Cemetery. And should we just start there?
Yeah.
So which part should we go first, east or west?
I think for me it'd be more interesting to go to the western part because I've only been to the eastern part yet.
Good. So if you turn right, so the west part is the part that you can only go with a guided tour. I think you pay...
Unless when you do a digital virtual tour, then you can go anytime like us.
Oh, right. Okay. So you can do the virtual tour if you run out of ideas what to do at home of Highgate West Cemetery. But we're not just imagining we're there in real and we go on one of the guided tours and they have excellent guides. I mean, the stories they tell about the people who buried there and the history of the cemetery, it is really worth going. I mean, it's one of the, probably, I would really recommend it to anyone who visits London. But anyway, let's start.
There's a bit of a history of London somehow as well through the people who are buried there.
Yes, absolutely. You do really learn a lot about London and also how about the growth of London, because the cemetery was actually established in 1839. And that was a time when the population in London just grew immensely and they were running out of burial space in the church cemeteries in central London. So it was decided that they needed more space for burials and the authorities of London decided to build 7 cemeteries around central London. And Highgate Cemetery was the cemetery for North London, overlooking the city.
Yeah, it's quite an amazing place, actually. Highgate is located on a hill. I mean, that's why also the name Highgate. And when you're on the top of that hill, you can see all over London. You can see the high rises, you can see all the sites, you can see the Thames from afar. So it's quite an amazing view. So when you go to the cemetery, also go to the highest point and have a look. So let's go in.
Yeah. So the West Cemetery. When you come in, you actually walk through the chapel first. And then you come onto a yard, which is like a half moon, quite a big square. It's almost a square. And that's where the hearses and the people following the hearse would come first before they entered the cemetery. And everyone would gather there. And then from there, the hearse would go to the grave spot. And it's quite interesting because it's built on a hill. So everyone had to go uphill to the right spot where then the burial would take place.
It's like, it's really like big sort of graves, you know, it's not just little gravestones, but it's like a sort of almost like a little town with arches and pathways and like you said, the chapel at the entrance. So it's actually quite an amazing place to walk around because it doesn't feel like you're on a field with graves, but actually in a proper town almost, or a town of the dead.
And there are the different roads that you go, and then you have to take your left or right turn. You have to know where to go to end up at the right place if you want to visit the grave. So it really is, yeah, it's really a bit like a small village. And so first you walk through the woody bits. There's a lot of wildlife there as well, a lot of birds, there are foxes. It's basically a forest with a lot of very old graves, overgrown graves, some of them. And then you come to a quite famous architectural structure. That is really like the center of the village, you could say. And that's the Egyptian Avenue. it is built like, well, it has all the features of Egyptian architecture, and that's because in Victorian times, I think it was just very fashionable, all this kind of Egyptian style, the Egyptian style. And so they built that avenue, and the graves in the avenue, in the Egyptian avenue, were some of the most expensive grave spots that you would find. And when you walk up that avenue, then you come to a round bit where in the middle you have a round of graveyards, and then around that as well. And above it all is or was a Lebanese cedar. But sadly, they had to take down the cedar because I think it wasn't very healthy anymore. And that was one of the big features of the cemetery, and yeah, which doesn't exist anymore.
And when you say graves, you need to imagine these are like little houses.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
Actually really big. And then and then often there were multiple people in there, right? I mean, whole families or the partners.
That's right. Yeah, they're really like houses in the village. And I remember the tour guide telling us as well that it was quite common for families together on a Sunday and go into the graves and have a little celebration with the deceased. So to see, I don't know, go and see grandpa in his grave and include him in the family gathering. So that was quite common at the time.
In some ways it sounds a bit odd, but in some other ways actually makes me think that's quite an interesting and maybe healthy thing to do, to include the people that are passed away in your family, and to sort of accept or that the death is part of life, and that they are also still sort of part of the family, and that everybody includes them still in their daily lives.
Yeah, there were, I think it was much more part really of family life. And yeah, I absolutely agree with you. I think it's a beautiful thought to do that, but although I'm not quite sure myself if I'd be really up for having a family picnic on a graveyard. Maybe leave that to the Victorians after all. So we are in this round bit where the Lebanese cedar used to throne above our heads, and there's one grave I wanted to point out, and the tour guide also likes to point out. And that's the grave of Ratcliffe Hall. Have you heard of her?
No, you're putting me on the spot. I don't know. Should I know Ratcliffe Hall?
I didn't know her before the tour, to be honest. But she was famous at the time. She was the author of a book called The Well of Loneliness. And that was published in 1928. And it was a groundbreaking piece of work in lesbian literature. She wrote about some that, you know, people really did not talk or write about back then, homosexuality in general, but I guess even lesbian sexuality even more. And you can imagine that she was very controversial. And so she has a tomb there. She's buried there with her partner. And very sadly, there are and were people who damaged the grave as well because she was so controversial. But I think it's still a bit of a spot of pilgrimage for a lot of people who honour her memory as well. I think more people go there to honour her memory than the other way around.
And I assume there must have been very controversial as well to bury her in the cemetery, because I'm sure some church would probably oversee this. So it's actually quite extraordinary that she's buried there in the 1940s.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised myself, and I don't know the answer, but I think next time I go on a tour, I will definitely ask that question, because it is the biggest part of the cemetery was a Church of England. There was a smaller part for so-called dissenters, so that's everyone from other Christian groups or other religions, but the biggest part was reserved for Church of England burials, and it is a very famous spot for film shoots. And the guides said to us as well that they do have quite a bit of income from film shoots there.
It is amazing. When you walk through these alleys on these paths, you really feel like this is some abandoned ruins and sort of an overgrown, an old city where, you know, things are sometimes a bit damaged and overgrown. But it's really like an incredible sort of atmosphere that you're in there. Very gripping, very impressive to be there.
It's actually the second time I'm taking you to some kind of ruin.
Yeah, well,
yeah, it's the first time,
you love
wasn't
ruins,
it?
Remember? So this makes sense.
Yeah, my love for ruins is never ending. Maybe I should take you next time to something which is whole. But it is that it just has this atmosphere of it also puts your life in context, and you think all these people who are buried there and had their lives, had their loves, their struggles, their joys, their passions, and they created things, artists, writers, sports people, and at some point they their life ended, and as all our lives will end. And I kind of like that humble feeling about cemeteries.
And it's also quite interesting from a, it's like a concentration of history, because you have people buried here that are from all different centuries. So people very recently, people from the 20th century, but also older. And as we said earlier, right, each person sort of represents a bit of the history of that, of London and of those times as well. So I think it's also really interesting to be on a graveyard, because you have that concentration of history and all these historical moments sort of come together, and as you said as well, it's a moment to think about life and death and you know where we are in this world. And I think that is actually quite an amazing place, especially if you can do that in such an incredible surrounding as here.
And on that note, actually, can I take you to another historic grave? So there is actually a superstar of the 19th century that I haven't heard before I went on the cemetery, Tom Sayers. Have you heard of him?
Oh, yeah, that rings a bell. I've heard, but I don't know much about his story.
So he was a boxer, 19th century, one of the most famous sportsmen of the time. And he's buried there. And he was really a superstar of the time that most people probably don't know his name now. And that was one of the biggest, if not the biggest, funeral that ever happened in London. Thousands and thousands of people lined the streets of London when he was buried. And the hearse went through the whole city of London up to Highgate Cemetery, and people would come following the coffin. And so if you see his grave, there is a dog on it. Because
yes, I noticed that. Why is that?
His closest companion was his dog. And his dog was also his chief mourner. In England, you have at the funeral, you have what you call a chief mourner. So that would be the main person. Usually, if it's a married couple, it would be the widow or the widower. And in Tom Sayers' case, he appointed his dog to be his chief mourner. So he would also lead the coffin up the hill. And he is now... also will be forever sitting in a stone version on that grave.
Wow, quite an extraordinary story as well, and impressive that this worked and that he was buried here with this eccentric wish. So it's actually another symbol of how cool and interesting Highgate Cemetery is.
Maybe people weren't as conservative as you think of them back in the 19th century, I don't know.
Yeah, that may well be true. Yeah.
So we haven't.
Should we go to the other side, or is there anything else you want to show me in the western part?
No, let's go to the East Cemetery, the part that you know as well. So we walk down the hill again through the woods of West Cemetery, and we cross the streets and pay our £4 to go into the part where we can move around freely without a guided tour. So you've been there. Tell me, Laureen, what
yeah,
you like
so
about
now that
it?
I come out of the other, it feels it's a bit less architecturally and it's a bit less wild, it's a bit less of this grand incredible cemetery, but it's still a beautiful place, and it's like a little forest, and there's graves everywhere, some of them bigger, some of them smaller, some of them well maintained, or some of them like almost fallen apart and feels like they have been there for many, many decades. And you can walk around here for a long time. There's so many bigger paths, but also little hidden ways between the trees where you can get lost and discover abandoned graves, I can almost say. And when you walk down the main road, you easily come across very quickly probably the most famous person that's buried here, and that is Karl Marx.
A lot of people come to Highgate Cemetery just to visit the grave of Karl Marx, I think.
And you can almost not miss it, because it's the grave Karl Marx is with a giant head of him on his grave.
It's massive.
So when you walk down the road, you suddenly come across this giant head, and of course we all know how Karl Marx look like, so you cannot miss it.
It's really a massive grave, and there are always like also flowers laid down by his grave. So you can really tell people are going there to commemorate, really pilgrimage, really, to that grave.
Yeah, actually, that brings me to a story when I was there for the first time, because I was just standing in front of this tomb, and then a person came up to me and asked me whether I would take their picture with the grave. And of course I did, and then we started talking, and he started telling me that he's from China, and you know, he had trouble getting in. He didn't have the cash to pay the £4, and then he didn't find the grave at first, but now he's here, and he came all the way from China just to see the grave of Karl Marx, and to be there with and take a photo and tell his family back home about this moment. And I thought that was quite impressive, because I mean, we both live in London and we can go there anytime, but as you said, it really can be like a pilgrimage site where people come from very far just to see.
And interestingly, it's not even the original grave, because Karl Marx's original grave is really hidden away somewhere. They give you a map when you go in, and you will find the original site, but even with that map, it's quite difficult to find. And his wife is still buried in the original, which is a very discreet grave, overgrown with green. You can hardly see it. I think it's even broken in the middle. His wife is still buried there. And Karl Marx is now in this really big, impressive, visible grave. And sadly, they were separated after their death. I'm not quite sure how happy they'd be about that.
Yeah, you makes you wonder what he would have thought about the fact that you have to pay entry to see him, and that he's now buried under a giant head of himself, separated from his wife.
And I have actually quite a personal story about the Highgate, the east part of the Highgate Cemetery as well. I was there last year on Mother's Day. Mother's Day is in March in England, not in June, not in May, like in Switzerland. So yeah, it was my first Mother's Day, the first time since I've become a mother, and I was on my own with my little baby on that day. And I thought, oh, what should I do? It was kind of a nice day, well, at least it wasn't raining. And I decided to go to Highgate Cemetery with the pram and just walk around there. And it's a very memorable Mother's Day. I think I will never forget it. And I'm not sure if anything can match it. Because going to a cemetery on your first ever Mother's Day is quite a funny thing to do, I guess. So I have that personal connection as well with that site.
Yeah, and for me it's also a very special place, because as I said in the beginning, I lived 5-10 minutes from here, and I often came up here to Waterloo Park or on the bridge that is nearby to see the city from afar, or when there's fireworks, or just come for a walk or a run up here, you know, around the park and the cemetery. It's quite an amazing place. So we always choose places in London that we have a connection to, and that we think are special and also interesting for you to hear about, and then maybe to discover yourself sometime in the future.
But on a last note, if you come from Switzerland, bring a cervelat with you, because if after you visit Highgate Cemetery you're hungry, you can go to Waterloo Park, which is just next door, and it's one of the very few parks in London where you can actually barbecue. So that might just be a very nice ending of your day or for your lunchtime if you happen to be in North London.
So as we just were in the cemetery, we have actually quite a fitting question that was sent in by a listener. Carla, do you believe in afterlife?
Ooh, afterlife, a big topic, actually quite a philosophical topic, I find as well, not just theological. I find it a really hard question, because there is just no way that we can imagine what happens after we die. It's just the one big unknown of human life. And I find it's also everyone probably has a different image of what happens after we die. For me, I believe that afterlife is just something so completely different from what we experience here on Earth that we can't really grasp it with our minds. And perhaps the closest I can perhaps imagine that is some kind of state of being as when before we were born. And that it's kind [S2] Right. [S1] Of a similar state of being after we die. But then I don't know if you remember anything of before you were born.
Not very much, no, I'm afraid not.
I don't remember anything at all. And I think it has to do with that personality or that feeling of identity that we have as human beings on this earth is very specific to our life here on earth. So we have a sense of me, a sense of personality. And I think that's just not something that we have before or after life. And when we think about the question, what comes after we die, we always think from that perspective of being me. But the concept of me, I think, just doesn't exist afterwards. And that's why it's so hard to think about it.
Right. So to come back to the question, and I'm always making sure that the question is properly answered. Do you believe in afterlife? It's a yes or no question. I understand you say yes, but not in one of the ways that we would normally know, as in like heaven and hell, or resurrection or anything in that sort, because you say it's something beyond our comprehension, something beyond our personalized understanding of who we are.
If I would have to answer the question with yes or no, I don't believe in heaven and hell. I don't believe that there is hell for the bad guys and heaven for the good guys. Not just because it's not part of the Christian Reformed belief. In the Reformed tradition, we don't believe in heaven and hell. I think even if we did, I wouldn't believe it. So I don't believe in that sense that we continue to exist as persons and that we continue to exist with a sense of identity. I do believe, though, that whatever comes after, it's a good place, it's not frightening, and perhaps it will also be a bit of a relief, because imagine if life as we know it now would go on forever. I mean, for me, that's just a very exhausting thought. I don't know how you feel about that.
Oh, certainly. I fully agree in the sense that I believe that the finite characteristic of life makes it worthwhile. So only because we know it ends for every single person on this earth, that is actually only what gives us the motivation to appreciate what we have and to live to the fullest of our capacities and enjoy what we have as best as we can and to thrive for more and to do something in life. I think this is maybe something we can see in our daily lives. If you think of, I don't know, a book that would never end or a bag of crisps that would never be empty. I think even if at first that might sound amazing, if you think on second thought, it actually, we only appreciate the things that are finite, that ends at some point.
I really like that.
We can
that,
only
yeah.
really appreciate it in that point, I think. That's my personal, but maybe everyone can check for themselves, see whether that's the case for them as well. And I think that's, and therefore it is so important that we actually have death and that we accept it as part of our life, so we can then, you know, don't have to be afraid of the end in that way.
Mm. I really like the bag of crisps, by the way. I will definitely take that away from this episode.
I'm a big lover of crisps, so all my analogies will somehow have to do something with potatoes or crisps.
Yeah, enjoy it whilst it lasts. But it's true, yeah, I will definitely enjoy this bag of crisps much more in the future, just to think, you know, it is so enjoyable because it ends at some point. That's what I have to say. I mean, having describing life as enjoyable, I think is also a massive privilege and something to be really thankful for, because life is certainly not just an enjoyable experience for everyone. It can be quite the opposite. But I think then at the same time, thinking of death and making life more intensive, I really agree with you on that. And then at the same time, we don't very often think about death. Dying and death is something that we tend to exclude from our lives. And perhaps
it's a bit of a taboo, yeah.
It is a taboo. And I think it's probably also because there is something frightening. It's because we don't know. Anything that we don't know, the unknown, is frightening. And I think looking that in the eye and confront ourselves with what we are scared of, I think it's painful, but I think it's always worth to confront that pain and to have the courage to go to that painful place, because it just really makes us aware of who we are and also what we appreciate. And that's definitely true when we talk about death and life, that being aware of our mortality makes life just that more intense in a good way.
So we should take that courage. I think you inspire me to do that as well, to be courageous and to talk about death with not only, you know, accept it for yourselves, but also with people in your family, maybe elderly people, maybe people who are not necessarily, who are maybe very afraid of it. And I fully agree with you that I think what is really scary is actually the unknown, that we don't know what's going to happen, because we can't prepare for that. We can't sort of put our mind at rest and you know, have clear expectations. I think that is really what scares people, and what scares me certainly of this whole thing. But having that courage to actually confront that nonetheless is, I think, a really good message. Certainly, I think that's something I would try to do in my life more so now.
And I'm actually quite grateful to my parents, because that's something they were and are never shy to talk about. It's something we can talk quite openly about in my family. And perhaps it's also something I took away from my upbringing, and that really is now helps me as a minister as well, because that was never a taboo. My dad is a doctor, a retired doctor, so I guess if you're a doctor, you can't really avoid thinking about dying and death. But yeah, it's something I took away from them, and I'm grateful for that. And yeah, I think going to a cemetery, as we did for this episode, also puts your life in that perspective, to just feel your own mortality quite close, and also maybe feel that slight fear or anxiousness about it, and then talk to people about it. So cemeteries are certainly a good place to start that process.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a very humbling experience also to go there and have these thoughts and maybe be able to share them with someone as well.
Or a bag of crisps.
Oh, definitely a bag of crisps. Oh, I would definitely love that. I think British crisps are some of this. Even though I love Zweifel chips as well, British crisps are an art form, a delicious art form.
You prefer British crisps over paprika Zweifel crisps, seriously?
I love paprika Zweifel, but I think they're the only ones that are really up there in Switzerland. Whereas in England, I feel like there's so many amazing, you know, the kettle chips and all the hand-cooked, hand-roasted with sea salt from the Scottish shores and all that. I mean, how can you top that?
That's true. Which one is your favourite taste?
Ooh, it varies. I like a lot. I like the vinegar ones sometimes. I love the chili ones. I love the black pepper ones. Sometimes just the salt. But actually, currently, my favourite is the vegetable crisps.
Oh, they're nice.
So not just potatoes, but also others.
I like everything spicy. The chili ones and the jalapeno is really kind of spicy.
Oh, yeah, very nice.
That's my favourite.
Oh, now I really crave some crisps.
Yeah, me too.
I need
too.
To go see what I can find.
Let's
now.
Go. It's actually Aperol time. It's Friday evening. So I hope you have an amazing weekend at
Thank
home.
Thank you. You too.
And enjoy your crisps. And don't forget, they're so enjoyable because at some point the bag will be empty.
Exactly. Wonderful. Let's end on that note. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And now for some music from our brilliant organist, Peter Yardley-Jones.